Welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505. Yes, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, allow me to say that I am pleased to meet you and very charmed. Absolutely. But one thing I must tell you about this podcast is that it shall discuss about the latest news that happened this week. So, for example, I shall be discussing things like how Will Smith could be taking the baton from Robin Williams to play as the genie. And then afterwards, we will be looking at the big crossover that nobody asked for. Then afterwards, we shall see the grand return of Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron onto television, or at least on Netflix. And then afterwards, we will discover more about who is Carmen Sandiego. And finally, we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. If you would like to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is go to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. Or you can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. Okay. sorry, guys. I just decided I want to have a little bit of fun with the intro. So don't worry. I'm not going to do that British accent the whole way through. So it's just going to be natural old me. But anyways, yes, let's start things off with the first story right over here, in which we have one of the many Disney live action reboots that they have in store for us. Now, I think at this point, it's safe to say that it seems like Disney is going to be making a lot of them right now, considering that Beauty and the Beast not too long ago actually did surpass over $1 billion at the box office. So if anything, it's just going to encourage Disney to go and create more of them. And they already have a lot of them in store that seems like it's going to be official that they are moving forward. And a lot of the stuff that they have planned would include, I guess technically, Mary Poppins Returns, you got Mulan, you got probably Cruella de Vil also, then you also have, what do you got, maybe The Lion King, and so much more. But Aladdin is the one that, like, we've been hearing so many news, and it seems like it could actually be an official thing. Now, what is interesting to note about Aladdin is that what Disney wants to do with it is that they did promise that they're not going to completely whitewash the whole cast, where you're not going to see white actors, you're actually going to see Arabic and non-white actors actually playing the role. So at least it could culturally fit with what the movie is representing by telling this Arabic tale from the Thousand and One Nights to present Aladdin. But one thing that is interesting to note, though, is going to be the role of the genie, because it looks like it is possible that they could get someone, and that is actually, believe it or not, folks, Will Smith. And right now, Disney is actually in talks with Will Smith to see if he would actually go and provide the voice of the genie in their live-action reboot of Aladdin. Now, what is actually very interesting to note, though, is that this is actually not the first time that Will Smith talked with Disney in order to go and appear in a live-action reboot of one of their previous animated films. Will Smith was originally going to be one of the stars of Dumbo, which would be directed by Tim Burton. And what is actually interesting to note on that film is that what they want to do with it is that they not only would the star actually be Dumbo, but they also want to present many of the other actors as well that they have in store. Like, they already have many Tim Burton veterans, including Danny DeVito, and they are in talks with Michael Keaton to go appear as the villain. But we'll have to wait and see on that. But in the case of Will Smith, he was supposed to be one of the stars in there, but sadly, it didn't really go through. The whole talks never really went well. But the full explanation to why Will Smith is now in talks with Disney again, but for a different one, going into my source here onto Variety, it stated, following a string of adult dramas and action movies like Collateral Beauty and Suicide Squad, Smith has been eyeing a family-friendly film as his next project. He was circling the lead role in Dumbo, but walked away from a deal due to scheduling conflicts. Disney and Smith were still interested in working together, though, so the studio shortlisted him when the opportunity arose. So for now, what Disney decided to do is that they could tell that Will Smith is interesting in working on a project with Disney, so they just decided to put him on the side instead of completely rejecting him. So just in case that they need a role to fit in, they decided, you know what, let's go in, add in Will Smith. Now, if you guys would like to have a little bit more info about this live-action reboot of Aladdin, they already have a writer and a director on board to work on this movie. They brought in Guy Ritchie to be the director, which, as you guys may know, is the director of the recent Sherlock Holmes movies that stars Robert Downey Jr., and they have John August as the writer, who previously worked with Tim Burton before on movies such as Big Fish and Frankenweenie, I believe. I'm not 100% sure on that, actually. Let me double check on it just a little quick thing right here. Because, I do have a feeling, like, from my previous research and stuff like that, that John August did work on Frankenweenie, but I just want to be 100% sure on that. Okay, there we go. I'm just looking in here on IMDb. Oh, okay. Oh, wow. He actually did a lot. Okay, yes. He worked on a lot of films, actually, with Tim Burton. So, not only did he do Big Fish, and yes, he did Frankenweenie, but he also did Dark Shadows, Corpse Bride, and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And apparently, he is one of the writers of Don Bluth's Titan A.E., actually. He was a part of the writing crew, interestingly enough. So, yeah, that seems to be the whole ordeal with having Will Smith on board. Now, what is actually interesting to note is that I actually talked with one of my best friends regarding this, and we had an interesting discussion about, would Will Smith be ideal for the role of the genie? Because, keep in mind, with the path that Disney wants to do with many of their live-action reboots, some could say that they are leaning a little bit more towards the original source material with some of their works, like especially with The Jungle Book, where some of the direction that they want to go with does take more inspiration from the Rudyard Kipling book more so than what the Disney animated film did. But it is, since it is still a live-action reboot, it still has to mainly focus on the animated feature. Like in the recent reboot of Beauty and the Beast, you could tell that more than anything else, they took inspiration from the 1991 animated film. So that could actually be the same case with Aladdin. And it's because of that why I feel very hesitant with bringing in someone like Will Smith to play the role of the genie. Because here's the thing though. The genie is well known to be a comedic role. This is basically Robin Williams if he is a cartoon. Like, we all know that Robin Williams is the man who actually crafted the genie. Why nowadays he is more known as the, I'm trying to find my words, but why the genie is known to be one of Disney's most beloved comedic sidekicks. And I did have an idea of who I wanted to see as the live-action reboot version of the genie. And originally, I was thinking that James Monroe Inglehart would actually be perfect for that, considering that this is the guy who actually played the genie in the original Broadway show. But that doesn't really seem to be the case. That would sound a little bit too good to be true. Because the thing is that one element about these Disney live-action reboots is that, like, 99% of the time, they must have a big-name celebrity to appear in the film. I mean, sure, like, you could pretty much take Beauty and the Beast and put in some of the Broadway cast and even bring back some of the original actors to go and reprise their roles for that. That would sound great, but no, they have to put in big-name celebrities in order to satisfy the marketing of it. That's why in there you would have people like Ewan McGregor or Dan Stevens or Josh Gad or Emma Thompson, or like even bring in people that it doesn't matter if they can act or not, they just need to go and do the job just to fill in the names for the credits. Like, they would bring in people like Elle Fanning and Emma Watson. And in the movies that they appeared in, rather it be Beauty and the Beast or Maleficent, my God, they were awful. Like, for some reason, like, in the movies that they were in, they were absolutely bland in terms of their acting. And in some cases, they cannot sing for their frickin' lives. It is embarrassing, the performances that they would give out. But because they are recognizable names, they're technically doing their jobs more for the marketing than actually telling a good story of Beauty and the Beast or Sleeping Beauty. You know what I'm saying? And the thing is with Will Smith, it just feels like he's just there mainly because he's a big name celebrity and they want to include his name in the credits. It's not necessarily because he's a perfect role for the genie. And it doesn't really make sense. But there is one interesting thing that I remember seeing on social media is that there was at one point that I saw Gabriel Iglesias. He was just joking around, like just saying that, hey, Disney, if things don't work out with Will Smith, then maybe you could bring in Fluffy to be the voice of the genie. And I saw that and I thought it was just a little cute joke. So I kind of passed it on. And then suddenly I kind of thought to myself, you know what? That's not necessarily a bad idea. I can see that work, actually. Because, honestly, in terms of the genie, like I said before, what made him really work is the fact that he is played by Robin Williams, who is known to be a very successful and popular comedian. So, for the role of the genie, why not bring in a very successful and popular comedian? You know, you could bring in someone like Gabriel Iglesias or Louis C.K. or Jerry Seinfeld, or just someone who could bring in their own comedic talents and apply it onto the genie. Because in a way, it would work out in the spirit of the genie. Because some people would think that, oh, the genie is just some kind of pop culture spewing character. That's not necessarily the case. The genie works because it's Robin Williams. So if you could bring in a comedian that could bring in his own comedy onto the character, then we would definitely have a brand new version of the genie that people could actually appreciate and stuff like that. But this is not to say that Will Smith is not a funny actor. Like, he has done a lot of comedic roles, especially the ones that would really stand out would include, what was it? Well, there's the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and also Men in Black. But nowadays, you don't necessarily see Will Smith as a comedic character. Especially, one big thing in general, more so than just the genie, is going to be the direction with what they want to bring with the movie itself. Are they going to make it a lot more serious? Are they going to put in a lot more action onto it? Or is it going to be more in the veins of something like The Jungle Book or Beauty and the Beast that they're going to still keep it as a musical? And yeah, sure, Will Smith is definitely a singer. Like, he does have a bit of a music career. But that's also another thing why it's hard to really imagine Will Smith in the role. Because if this Aladdin reboot is a musical, does that mean songs like Friend Like Me are going to be rap numbers and stuff like that? I honestly don't know. It's just, there are just some things that don't necessarily work out. Oh my God, I just had a bit of an epiphany. You know, like, honestly, I get what they want to do with, in terms of the cast. Like, they want to have, kind of like a not, like, they don't really want to have white people onto it and try to stay as culturally appropriate as possible. But do you know who would actually really work out as the genie nowadays? Bring in Kevin Hart! Oh my God, why didn't I think of this before? That would actually be a great idea. I mean, the guy right now is known to be, like, a big-name comedian, and he has appeared in a lot of big movies. Why not actually bring in Kevin Hart to play as the genie? That would make so much sense. Oh my god. You know, that would actually be a great successor to Robin Williams, actually, where Kevin Hart can actually bring in his own comedic flair onto this, and it would still feel like the genie in a way. Like, it would be the same type of casting that's in the similar veins of something like The Jungle Book, you know? Oh, that would actually work out so well. And especially with Kevin Hart bringing in his own comedy. Oh, that would be great. Okay, Disney, get on that. Okay, you can reject Will Smith, put him in another thing, but get Kevin Hart to play as the genie. Oh, that would be perfect. Oh, wow. Wow. Oh, my God. That is amazing. Well, I wish that would be the case. I just don't know. We'll just have to wait and see on that. But for now, it seems that the talks are just going to be with Will Smith. I don't know. I feel like maybe it's not necessarily a bad choice. I mean, he is a good singer. He is a good actor. But I just don't really see him in the role of the genie. But honestly, Disney, get to work on bringing in Kevin Hart into this. Because seriously, that is a crazy idea right over there. Okay, so for our next story right over here, oh boy, we got a brand new trailer that really shook the animation community. And I think the best way to put it is that this trailer pretty much showed us the brand new version of Surf's Up 2 Wave Mania. And the reason why I'm comparing it to that film is because we are getting a crossover that basically nobody asked for. Like, these are two things that you never think about mixing together, and yet here we are in a position where now it exists. Where with Surf's Up 2, you actually got a rather obscure Sony Pictures animation film mixing it with WWE wrestlers. And now right over here, we got Warner Brothers, who thought it would be a crazy idea to mix Tom and Jerry and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Yes, we actually got a brand new direct-to-video feature film known as Tom and Jerry, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. So, you might be wondering, what is this movie about? What is it that makes it so different that now you add in Tom and Jerry onto the world of Willy Wonka? Well, I'll tell you what it is. So, they showed us this 80-second trailer, and the best way to put it is that what it's presenting us is basically if you take the 1971 classic feature and you decided that in between scenes, you would cram in as much Tom and Jerry cartoons as possible. So you would pretty much get the same movie as you did with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, but in between those moments, you suddenly have Tom and Jerry. And add that into the mix where you also have, like, this really laughably bad animation, which I will get to a little bit later. But yeah, that's basically what you get overall. Tom and Jerry, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. The number one film that people are anticipating so much that when they see the trailer, they just immediately got out of their bed and they started singing, "I never thought that I would be over the moon with ecstasy, but suddenly I begin to see a bit of good luck for me." Oh my god, where the fridge do I even begin with this? I looked at this trailer, and oh god, it is so bad. It is, like I said before, it really is laughably bad because it's just showing us the same things that we have already seen before. But the one thing that really did trigger so many people, like, really badly, is the fact that it started out by saying, "Get ready for an all-new original movie." Okay, hold the phone right there. Now, what the fridge is in this that would be considered original? Because from what I can see, there is literally nothing, absolutely nothing, that is original. You got Tom and Jerry, which are characters that already existed before. You did not create that. They've already lived for more than half a century. You got the story of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which is not your story. This is a pre-existing tale that's written by Roald Dahl. And even the execution on that story, like everything from the production design to the way that the story is told, and even the musical numbers, they're already lifted directly from the 1971 film. And I guess some people can argue, well, there is that little Oompa Loompa mouse, which, by the way, yes, in the trailer, they introduced us to this talking mouse that dressed up like an Oompa Loompa that's supposed to be the tour guide for Tom and Jerry around the chocolate factory, like what Willy Wonka is doing to the kids. And that's pretty much his role. But even at that mouse wouldn't even be considered original. And that's pretty much it. The only thing that it did that's really original is if you would take two pre-existing properties that have absolutely zero in common and just try to mix it in together. In fact, this entire story right here, it feels like something that Warner Brothers just took directly off of DeviantArt and just decided to turn that into a movie. In fact, it actually sounds like one of those like big crossovers that kids would go and write that would include so many different properties and characters onto this one story. Like, you would just see this preteen just writing on the internet going, "And then Tom and Jerry would enter into Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and then he's accompanied by the kids who got the golden ticket, which consists of Charlie Bucket, Eddie, and SpongeBob SquarePants. But then the evil Gargamel and his assistant LeFou are also sneaking in order to conquer the chocolate factory. But now it's going to be up to Willy Wonka, who turns out to be my OC anthropomorphic lion Jonathan, and his crew of Oompa Loompas, which are actually minions, to go and save the day."
Oh my god. That's what it basically is. It's a stupid fanfic that a kid thought up and just go and integrate that into a movie for some reason. A movie that nobody asked for. And then you also have the animation. Oh my god, the animation that we see in this trailer, it is bad. It is so laughably bad. In fact, you look at this, and I can definitely tell you right now, this does not even seem passable as television animation. It really is that low of a quality. In fact, the one thing that really did stand out in this entire scene, or like in this entire trailer, is when you see Charlie opening up the Wonka bar, revealing the golden ticket, because the facial expressions on that kid is some of the worst drawings that you'll ever find in terms of facial expressions. Like, his eyes are going freaking all over the place. They are not focused into one freaking area. And it just looked like Charlie, like, all the brain cells in Charlie's head decided to go on a vacation, just escape his brain. And, like, he's just opening up the golden ticket. He's just there, like, like, oh my god, it looked really bad. And, like, even a lot of the animation in this, it's just a freaking joke. Like, I don't necessarily mind the character design. Like, I get what they're trying to do. They're basically taking a lot of what we've got from the 1971 film and adapt that into a 1940s style cartoon. Like, I get the idea. The concept of it is not too bad, but the execution of it is what makes it absolutely embarrassing. However, there is one thing I would like to note, though, is that on Cartoon Brew, when they discussed a little bit about Tom and Jerry, Willy Wonka, and the Chocolate Factory, they did actually put up a second trailer to this film. And what it basically is that it shows us the first 2 minutes where we see the introduction of Tom and Jerry onto the story of Willy Wonka, where they're just hungry. And mostly what you see is just the same old shtick that you would find in any other cartoon. It's not really that funny, to be honest. But admittedly, from what I saw in that trailer, the animation is far superior than what you would get in the trailer that we've all seen from movie clips. The one that shows like the whole chocolate factory, and the one that acts more like a trailer more so than just a clip. But the basically what I'm getting from both of these, it actually feels like the animation on Tom and Jerry could actually be just decent, but the human characters might be a joke. Like, they're not even gonna give a freaking crap about it. So that could be the impression, is that you'll get some decent animation, but you'll also get a bit of laughably bad animation at the same time. So with that said, though, I'm sure there was actually one big question that a lot of you guys are probably wondering. Why? Why does this thing have to exist? How did we end up in a situation where now we ended up with a direct-to-video feature that is legitimately called Tom and Jerry, Willy Wonka, and the Chocolate Factory? That's literally just Tom and Jerry shoehorning into the story of the 1971 film. Well, I've actually done a bit of research on this, and upon my discoveries, it's actually quite interesting, honestly, because there is a bit of a transition to how we ended up here. All right, now just listen up. Here's the thing. Now, when it comes to Tom and Jerry and their direct-to-video feature films, there is actually a lot of them. Not as much as what Warner Brothers would do with Scooby-Doo, but they do actually have a good chunk that could almost be in the same numbers as there are Land Before Time sequels. And starting with the 2010s, there seems to be this new thing that Warner Brothers decided to do, or at least later on in more recent years, Warner Brothers decided that they want to mix Tom and Jerry with pre-existing stories. So make Tom and Jerry adaptations, if you will. And that is how we ended up with movies such as Tom and Jerry Meets Sherlock Holmes, Tom and Jerry A Nutcracker Tale, or Tom and Jerry Robin Hood and His Merry Mouse. So they're basically taking pre-existing stories, but trying to integrate Tom and Jerry onto it. In fact, there's also another one called Tom and Jerry's Giant Adventure, where it's almost like a Shrek type of, or not just Shrek, but also like kind of a Shrek hoodwink type of story, where it's just Tom and Jerry in a whole giant mix match of random fairy tales. But then came 2011, where there is this one movie that they decided to do another adaptation, but it didn't necessarily came out as an adaptation, but a bit more as a crossover. And that is Tom and Jerry and the Wizard of Oz. Now, the reason why I say that it is a little bit more of a crossover is mainly because is that they didn't necessarily explain their own spin on the Wizard of Oz story. This isn't their own crafted Wizard of Oz tale. This is a little bit This is taking a lot of inspiration from the 1939 classic film. And when you see like the entire production design and the entire look of the film, you could definitely tell that it took a lot of inspirations from that movie. In fact, even looking at the characters alone, you would see that Dorothy is actually modeled after Judy Garland. And even her friends like the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion, they actually look more like the actors that are portrayed in the 1935 film than actually looking like a legit Scarecrow or Tin Man or Lion. So that's why it is a bit more of a crossover. And this idea of a crossover kind of stuck a little bit, because later on recently, they actually did release a movie called Tom and Jerry Spy Quest, where this one is actually more of a legitimate crossover, where it's Tom and Jerry with Johnny Quest. Now, admittedly, this is actually more of a crossover that makes a lot more sense than Tom and Jerry and Willy Wonka, considering that we have two different Hanna-Barbera properties working together. So at least That would make sense right there. But apparently, it seems like this Wizard of Oz film got really popular down to the point that in 2016, they actually did a sequel to that film. This is the first time that Tom and Jerry would actually have a sequel to one of their direct-to-DVD films with Tom and Jerry Back to Oz, where the new thing that they incorporated was that they have Jason Alexander as the Gnome King. And I guess what pretty much happened now is that this Tom and Jerry and the Wizard of Oz movie must have been really popular. Like, the DVD sales on that must have gone through the roof, where they want to go and explore that kind of movie, where they want to do more stuff with putting Tom and Jerry onto pre-existing movies. Not necessarily making their own adaptation, but making a feature film that we've already seen before, which now in this case is Willy Wonka. Now, are we going to see more of that in the future? It could be a possibility. This might not be the last, but yeah, that would be my theory, at least, to how we ended up with Tom and Jerry, Willy Wonka, and the Chocolate Factory. If anything, it would most likely be because of Tom and Jerry and the Wizard of Oz. Now, if I have to think up of a second explanation onto why is it that we have this, I would probably say drugs. Like, that's my only thing I could say, is just there must have been some executives who decided to go and reenact some scenes from Wolf of Wall Street, and one of them decided to go and put on the TV and they saw Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. They looked at it and they just said, "I got an idea! You see that thing on the screen? Yeah, that thing. Yeah, that's Willy Wonka, right? I got an idea. Why don't we make an animated film on that? But what we're gonna do, we're gonna put in Tom and Jerry. We're gonna put in a lot of Tom and Jerry on there. Tom and Jerry here, Tom and Jerry there. We're gonna put in so much Tom and Jerry on that thing. So we're gonna have Tom and Jerry and Willy Wonka at the same time. And since this is a cartoon, we can do whatever the hell we want with it. We can even bring people back from the dead like Grandpa Joe and Gene Wilder. It's gonna be a blast. We're gonna get so much money onto this. By the way, John, can you look on the right? Just watch out for that leprechaun on there. The one that's only wearing a jockstrap." So that's pretty much what's basically going on. But overall, now we are in a situation where we end up with an actual Tom and Jerry with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And basically, the reaction that people are having on it, yeah, people are basically hating it. They're giving it a taste of the Emoji Movie treatment, where people are pretty much hating it, and they're punishing this movie for its mere existence and how stupid of an idea that it is, and they are 99.9% sure that it's going to come out as a terrible movie. So yeah, not necessarily getting as much hate as the Emoji Movie, considering that this is just a direct-to-DVD movie and those things can be easily ignored. But yeah, like, just hearing the idea that there's going to be a Tom and Jerry Willy Wonka movie, it is absolutely stupid. And if you guys are like so curious to the point of wondering if you want to see this movie come out, well, they didn't have an official release date. I heard that it could be out in the summer, but all we know is that if you're ready to go on a sugar high with freaking Tom and Jerry, then you'll have to wait this year to have it on DVD and maybe Blu-ray, or I have no freaking idea. My God, seriously, Warner Brothers, what the fridge are you even thinking? Okay, so for our next story right over here, we're going to be looking into another trailer, but this time it's going to be a little bit less stupid. In this case, where we are going to be having our first ever look into the Netflix series that is based on the old DreamWorks film, Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron. Yes, 15 years later, they decided to bring that back. And for those of you who don't know what this is, I'm looking onto my source here on the Animation Scoop, and it actually gave us the official synopsis on it. So it says here, when city turned country girl Lucky meets a wild Mustang named Spirit, she feels an instant connection to the untamable horse. A courageous and natural born leader, Lucky navigates this new world with her two new best friends, Prue and Abigail, by her side. The trio embark on thrilling adventures, finding genuine friendship, and discover what it means to be free. So basically, the whole situation is that we actually got a computer animated series that is not about Spirit, but it's about this girl named Lucky. And honestly, when I looked at this trailer right over here, I'm not gonna lie, as a Spirit TV series, it got me confused. Because number one, like I said, it's not about Spirit. It's not about the Matt Damon horse. This is about this girl named Lucky, and Spirit is just there because, like, he's not necessarily a character. Spirit is just there because he's kind of like, he's more like a transportation to Lucky. So that's mainly the relationship, and mostly what Spirit's role is going to be in this. It's more going to be focused on the girl's adventures. And two is the fact that it's computer animated. I mean, for the most part, DreamWorks would go and release a lot of, like, Flash animated, or at the very least 2D animated series. Kind of like with Turbo Fast, Dawn of the Croods, or the Mr. Peabody and Sherman Show. But for this one, you finally made a series based on a hand-drawn animated feature, and you decided to go and make a computer animation. And not just that, but kind of cheap computer animation as well. I mean, the thing is that considering that I know for a fact that they could do better, considering that this is also from the same people that made Troll Hunters, this is a massive downgrade. I mean, this is some pretty low-grade computer animation right here. No offense to the people working on it, but yeah. I mean, considering that this is coming from DreamWorks Television Animation, like, if you are going to go computer animated, you could have done at least a bit more. Or at the very least, just stick with 2D. I mean, keep it into the same visual spirit as Spirit. No pun intended. Keep to the visual. For fudge sakes. For some reason, I can't really articulate that in my mouth. The same visual spirit of Spirit. That's basically what I wanted to say. Like, why not just keep it Flash animated, or just have some 2D animation going on? Or I guess would it be a little bit too difficult to do so in, like, to animate horses and stuff like that? But honestly, when I would look at this, I kind of feel like for some reason, like, there must have been somewhere in the beginning of the production where this was never meant to be a Spirit show. Because I look at it and the way that it's built up, considering that it's a lot more about the girls than it is about the horses, it just feels like it was supposed to be its own thing at the beginning. It's kind of like in the same veins of Dino Trucks, where it's not necessarily based on one of their older movie properties. It's just kind of its own thing right there. And there's this one person who kind of looked into DreamWorks library, and they suddenly spotted Spirit of the Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron, and they just went, "Guys, DreamWorks has a horse! I got an idea. We're gonna make Spirit the horse of Lucky. That's all we're gonna do. What about the other horse characters? Screw them. We have Spirit now, and it's going to be called Spirit." But are we going to change the main character? No. We're just changing the title and we're changing the main horse. That's pretty much it. We gotta add that spirit. And honestly, like, it kind of feels cheap in that sense. And especially in terms of the time frame. Like, maybe this is not necessarily the case, because I feel like for some reason, the whole story in this, it kind of feels like it could be set at any time. It could be set either in the past or in the, like, this could easily be interpreted like something in the present. And the reason why I say that is because Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron is supposed to be set in the 19th century. Now, maybe this could be the case in here, considering that we don't necessarily see Lucky texting on her phone or anything like that. We just see her basically acting like any city girl moving to somewhere else where she misses her friends, she doesn't necessarily like her new environment, and all that kind of stuff. It's that same old trope that they're going with in terms of the character. But yeah, like honestly, maybe they'll explain a bit more when the series actually does come out, but the time frame is something that I am a little bit confused with. But this is not to undermine the entire series overall. I'm not saying that this is gonna suck. I'm pretty sure that what DreamWorks would have, maybe it could actually turn out into something decent. This could actually turn out into something that could be a pretty good show, something that like young girls can actually watch and they could actually appreciate, you know, like not just girls, but also for horse lovers as well. Just to see the adventures of these girls just riding on horses and just having little adventures on their own with different episodes. So maybe they can actually work out something well with it. It's just that by watching this trailer, I would advise to everyone, do not go in expecting Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron. Do not think that it's going to be like that right there. You're not going to hear Matt Damon talking like in the mind of that horse. So you're not going to see this whole, like, basically this horse is just going to act more like a horse. And if you really need Matt Damon onto this, like all you're just going to hear in his mind is just going to be Matt Damon. or even worse, like you're just going to see in the mind of that horse and it's just going to be that facial expression Charlie Bucket did in Tom and Jerry Willy Wonka when he opens up the golden ticket. So it's basically that kind of mindset right there. But yeah, this is just one thing that I just want to say. If you guys are excited to see this series, I definitely encourage you to do so. And I definitely do hope as much as you would that this would actually turn out great. But I would just advise you, do not expect Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron. And if you are excited for this series to come out, then it will be available exclusively on Netflix on May 5th. Okay, so for our next story right over here, we actually got a smooth transition jumping from one Netflix series to another. And this is something that Netflix has officially announced, where they're going to revive an old character with Carmen Sandiego. Now, Netflix actually made the announcement that they are going to make their own Carmen Sandiego series. And so far, the only thing that we know is that they actually have Gina Rodriguez to provide the voice of Carmen Sandiego. Now, to give you guys a little bit of information of what is Carmen Sandiego to begin with, going into my source here on Variety, it stated, the series will be based on the iconic educational computer game franchise that follows Sandiego as she travels across the world stealing national treasures. It will offer an intimate look into the character's past, where viewers will not only follow her escapades, but also learn who in the world is Carmen Sandiego and why she became a super thief. Sandiego was the main antagonist of several games, including Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? In addition, she was featured in multiple books, live-action game shows, and an animated series called Where on Earth is Carmen Sandiego, which ran for 40 episodes between 1994 and 1998. So that's basically what we got with Carmen Sandiego, is that in the very beginning, she's pretty much like Tomb Raider if she was a villain. And considering that she was meant to be for educational games, like basically what you would get is that Carmen Sandiego would go into somewhere in Washington, D.C., and she would pretty much tell the audience, this is the Declaration of Independence. This thing was signed on 1776 in Washington, D.C. You could find it right now in this museum. But you won't anymore because now this thing is mine. And then suddenly following from behind, you got Nicolas Cage going, hey, I spotted that first. Nah, but anyways, it is actually pretty interesting with Carmen Sandiego because she did become a little bit of an icon where a lot of people kind of see her kind of like the female version of Where's Waldo, because the main thing about her is that she would keep disappearing from so many different places around the world. And she did become some sort of phenomenon where the games really did spun off into something far bigger, where you would also see her in different TV shows and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that does actually seem like a pretty cool idea, where you actually get to learn a lot more of Carmen Sandiego, you know, kind of have this female protagonist, or maybe would they make her a protagonist here, or would she be presented more as an anti-hero in this series? I don't know. Personally, I have never played the games. I've never seen the series. Like, I've heard about all the different references about Carmen Sandiego, but the big thing is that, I guess, like, with the way that they'll present her as more of an anti-hero, and I guess, you know, it would give, this main female character that people can look up to. Someone who could be capable of just being in the similar veins of characters like Tomb Raider or Indiana Jones, to go and get all these national treasures from all around the world. So this could actually come out as a pretty cool idea. And in a way, I guess some people could argue is that maybe this could be geared more towards fans, since they are going to be talking more about the origins of Carmen Sandiego. It's more like this series is meant more to develop the character about who she is and why is it that she does what she does. But at the same time, maybe this could also bring in new audiences as well to learn about who is Carmen Sandiego in the first place. So yeah, this could definitely be the revival that Carmen Sandiego would actually need right now in order to be relevant in our modern culture. So who knows how that's going to go. So if you guys are excited to see the comeback of Carmen Sandiego, then all you have to do is just wait until 2019 when that series is going to be coming out on Netflix. And now, last but not least, we are going to be looking into Animat's Pick of the Week. And for this week, I decided I wanted to go and check out this new little phenomenon that's actually been going on, or this big trend that it used to be old, it used to be a small piece of obscurity, but now it has gotten ridiculously big. And beforehand, allow me to ask you guys, does this sound familiar to you? Where's my Szechuan sauce? I need my Mulan sauce, Morty. Where's my Szechuan sauce, man? I need my Szechuan sauce. I need my Mulan sauce. Yes. If you are a fan of Rick and Morty, or you know someone who is a fan of Rick and Morty, then maybe you have stumbled upon onto social media regarding the Szechuan sauce. Now, you might be curious, what is the Szechuan sauce to begin with? Well, it actually all started at McDonald's. In fact, there is a little bit of a description here that Rick actually provided for us. They created a new sauce for the McNuggets called the Szechuan sauce, and it's delicious, but they got rid of it, and now it's gone. The only place we could try it is in my memory. And that is actually true, because at McDonald's, they released the Szechuan sauce for a very limited time in 1998, because the sauce was meant to be just this little Asian-style dipping sauce for McNuggets in order to go and promote Mulan, which was the newest Disney animated film at the time. But then, on April Fool's Day, with the Season 3 premiere, they decided to make a little bit of a joke out of it, where Rick is on the hunt to go and relive the memory of tasting the Szechuan sauce, to get as much as he can in order to have that delicious sauce in his mouth. And ever since then, it pretty much exploded in our modern pop culture. Like, April has been showered with Szechuan sauce. And this week, it has gone down to the point where people are as addicted to Szechuan sauce as Rick is, because there's this one man in the UK. He actually was, searching around his old car, and he stumbled upon an old little pack of Szechuan sauce. He decided to go and put it up on eBay, and what ended up happening is that the bids went so ridiculously high that someone legit spent a grand total of, I believe, 11,500 pounds. I just want to get the right number to see if it's correct. I also got my source here. Yeah. Okay, there we go. 11,500 pounds, which in U.S. currency would be the equivalent of $14,700. Someone legit spent nearly $15,000 for a small packet of Szechuan sauce. And ever since then, you see people freaking out about it, and they're making so many different petitions to McDonald's in order to go and bring back the Szechuan sauce. But what already people are saying is that, considering that we are getting a live-action reboot of Mulan at the end of 2018, it is possible that we could be expecting that McDonald's could bring back the Szechuan sauce during that time. So, at the very least, for me personally, I would say that I'm 80% sure that they would bring back the Szechuan sauce just to promote that live-action reboot of Mulan. However, though, there is actually one article that actually said the opposite, in a way. Pretty much debating why is it that they should not bring back the Szechuan sauce when the Mulan remake would be released. And this is actually coming from an article on Inverse.com. Now, beforehand, I didn't necessarily read the article, and I thought to myself, okay, maybe this would be an interesting read, and would probably discuss that maybe the Szechuan sauce is just way too unhealthy and would immediately clog your arteries, and it would just be like this one-way ticket to a heart attack. But after upon reading it, no, it is not because it's unhealthy. And in a way, I kind of feel stupid for thinking that, because for God's sakes, it's freaking McDonald's. Almost everything that they have in there is super unhealthy, would immediately clog your arteries, and would already be a one-way ticket to a heart attack. I mean, even the salads are questionable at this point. No! Believe it or not, the reason why Inverse decided to argue not to bring it back is because it's kind of racist, apparently. There is actually one little piece that would actually describe everything. And it's stated here, the argument that it brought up is saying that Rick and Morty fans deserve to have their appetites for this now mythical sauce sated, but now in relation to a live-action remake based on real Chinese folklore and culture. Let me just reread that, because I think I kind of screwed it up in there. Rick and Morty fans deserve to have their appetites for this now mythical sauce sated, but not in relation to a live-action remake based on the real Chinese folklore and culture. Asian Americans already suffer from consistency, one-dimensional portrayals in the media, and only rarely get the opportunity to educate others about the differences between entire Asian nations, let alone nuances with an individual culture. Ultimately, what the Szechuan sauce effect does is flatten cultures that Western society deemed too complex to other to consider more carefully, and Asians have too often fallen victim to that judgment. So basically what it's saying overall is that the reason why McDonald's shouldn't bring back the Szechuan sauce is because it's just going to stereotype Chinese culture, because Szechuan is this one part of China, and just bringing in the Szechuan sauce, it's immediately going to bring in the mentality of Western culture that the Szechuan sauce is basically this Chinese sauce and nothing more. Now, before I can get into my thoughts on that, allow me to just talk about, like, the whole Szechuan sauce in general, is that it is actually pretty funny that Rick and Morty would actually bring back this small piece of obscure pop culture media and use that as their big joke, and then suddenly it has become this new big thing. Suddenly it just revived it altogether. And I guess that is kind of the power of good quality television. If you're capable, like, you can pretty much take anything, like this small piece of obscure media, and you can make it really popular again. Like, Rick and Morty can probably just make a joke about Adam Ant, and then suddenly it's going to be currently the most popular Hanna-Barbera show, for example. But yeah, you know, it is actually cute. It is actually pretty fun. And I guess I kind of get like how it would bring up the curiosity of like what the Szechuan sauce kind of tasted like, because as a kid, I have no memory about the Szechuan sauce at all. I don't think I even cared about it because, for God's sakes, I was a kid. I was more focused on what kind of toys would they have. In fact, I actually remember more what Mulan toys did they bring up in like for Happy Meals and stuff like that instead of the Szechuan sauce in itself. And it would actually be kind of fun to see if McDonald's would actually bring back the Szechuan sauce. And like I said, considering that Rick and Morty did make it popular again, it does actually increase the chance for McDonald's to actually go and actually re-release the Szechuan sauce. I wouldn't say anytime soon, but a lot of people are pretty much saying it would most likely be for Mulan. And yeah, it would definitely bring up the chance right there. Like if like the genius move that McDonald's would do is that for next year, if they can actually do kind of this cross promotion on Adult Swim with Rick and Morty promoting the Szechuan sauce and stuff like that, then yeah, like it would definitely bring up the sales. But you know, like as someone, like even myself, like I really do enjoy Rick and Morty. Like if they do bring back the Szechuan sauce, like I would probably try it out just to see. In fact, oh my God, I just realized it's actually been years since I've tried McNuggets or anything like that. I'm more into the burgers that they got there. But it is very rare that I would go to McDonald's, but still, you know, it is something that would be fun and pretty curious to see like what's going on. But I wouldn't go as crazy as like the guy who would spend freaking $15,000 onto a freaking small pack of Szechuan sauce. And by the way, that thing is old. It's already like 20 years old. I wouldn't be surprised if the sauce has been turned into freaking alcohol. I wouldn't even try that with my freaking life. So if anything, unless you're going to curate that into a freaking McDonald's museum, I don't know if I would be down for that. Seriously, it's just, just keep it safe in a locker. Don't eat it, is all that I'm saying with it. But then you would have this little article on Inverse, which did get around social media, and there are some people that did pick up on it. And honestly, my feelings on what it's trying to say with the argument that the sauce could be a bit racist is just, calm the fridge down, dude. It's just a sauce. I mean, there's a fine line on what you can deem what is considered racist or not. And I, you know, honestly, I'm not necessarily a fan of people like pointing out to different movies like Ghost in the Shell and just say, oh, that's whitewashing right over there and stuff like that. But honestly, the thing is, this is just a freaking sauce. Like, are you really gonna get mad and act and like go full on social justice warrior on a freaking sauce? Like, that just makes no freaking sense. Like, you gotta draw the line somewhere on what you can protest on what is racist or not. Like, here's the thing. I completely understand going out and try to attack Donald Trump and the fascist GOP government, or even going out and attack the American Nazi Party, also known as the alt-right. I understand, because their actions or what they're planning to do for their actions or their goals, basically, it actually does harm and cause negative effects to millions of people, not just in America, but also around the world. So it is completely understandable, and I completely encourage to protest as much as you can to stop them, you know, to call out impeachment on Donald Trump, to take down the GOP government, or to go punch Nazis like their pathetic leader, Richard Spencer. That thing, I understandable. That is socially acceptable. You can completely do that. That is completely fine. Being pissed off and calling out racist on a freaking sauce? No. That is a little bit stupid right over there. Because the thing is, this sauce does not harm people. It does not cause negative effect onto millions of Americans in the same veins of like Donald Trump. All it is nothing more but a little sauce in a fast food restaurant that you're supposed to just dip your McNuggets onto that is just supposed to be promoting a Disney animated film. That's all its purpose is. It's not harmful. So calm the fridge down. It's just a frickin' sauce, okay? That's all that it is. So, yeah, honestly, I'm definitely one of those people that would love to see the comeback of Szechuan sauce. So, we'll just see how it goes. Maybe next year they will bring it back. But in the meantime, I guess for now, our only taste of it is going to be this Rick and Morty episode. And with all that said, that is all that I've got for this week. So, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can go and find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or The Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at animat505. And if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little bit of a favor and go and rate and review this episode? Oh, that would be lovely. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then go hit that like button in our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts about the news of this week. Now tune in next time for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, I bid you adieu, and I shall say, see you later, dudes.